At the Jaipur Literature Festival in Rajasthan, among wordsmiths and bookworms, we spoke to Jonathan Shainin. He's the senior editor of The Caravan, a magazine of long-form journalism that renders the characters and scenes of contemporary India in vivid literary color. Jonathan Shainin is an American, but he's immersed in an Indian publication, where he's instrumental in bringing substantive storytelling to the boisterous stage of Indian news.
So, with Caravan, you wanted to form another a sort of forum akin to the New Yorker or long-form magazines in the US. And in the 3 years you've been there as senior editor, it's become the preeminent long-form journalism magazine in India. How have you implemented that vision?
My way of thinking about it was that you needed to do something that would make the magazine feel cohesive and coherent and kind of urgent. You have a monthly magazine coming out. You are writing in a style and in a format that I think is very compelling and I think is really going to make people want to read stuff. But you can't really compete with weekly magazines. You can't compete with newspapers. You can't compete with 24/7 Indian news TV, which, as you know, is a very boisterous and vibrant and sometimes journalistically sketchy, but, you know, very, very active zone. So I think what we tried to think about was, how do we do best what we are best at, and can we sort of establish a niche where we're doing things that no one else can do? I mean, it's a bit about sort of, you know, I imagine this sort of sense of kind of a guerrilla army, you know, facing off against a big organized fighting force. You know, you have to kind of pick your battles. And I think one thing that we have tried to do has been to be extremely careful about what subjects we choose. You know, my big thing is that narrowness is our kind of, you know, guide, that what we want to do is isolate very specific stories and tell them in great detail, tell them in a captivating way, and to try to find stories that we think shed light on bigger issues. You know, so in some ways the subtext of every piece in Caravan is something about, you know, well, how do we live in India today? What are the issues facing contemporary India? What are the ideas in contemporary India that we find interesting? But our way of doing this has been, I think, to avoid big picture generalizations, to avoid trying to write, you know, big idea of India kind of pieces. I would discourage someone, for example, from writing a piece about a state. You know, I'd say, okay, don't write a piece about Tamil Nadu. Write a piece about the first political family, you know, Karunanidhi and his family who have run Tamil Nadu for the last 5 years. That's going to be our way of writing about Tamil Nadu. That's going to be our way of writing about the question of family and dynasty in Indian politics. And my theory, or my kind of axiom, I guess, is that if you do that piece right, all the context has to get in there. You know, so I can't write about Narendra Modi without writing about the BJP, without writing about what he's done in Gujarat, without writing about the, you know, what it is that's leading middle-class Indians to think that he might be some kind of savior for the country, without writing about what's leading other middle-class Indians and intellectuals to think that he's a dangerous man. And all that stuff, if you tell someone's life story and you kind of tell it in full, or you tell it as a sort of 360-degree portrait, all the background is going to be in there, but you're not forcing people to wade through the background. It kind of is coming up organically as you're telling the story. And I think for Caravan, that has sort of what's worked for us, is that people, you know, you needed something that made people feel like, okay, I need to read this. It's, you know, I think when you're making a magazine, the greatest challenge is kind of figuring out your own identity and figuring out that identity in a very sharp way, but then sort of having the faith to carry it through. Because on an issue-by-issue basis, it can often feel like you have no idea what you're doing. You know, on any given month, you've got to put a magazine out, you've got to gather together what's available and put it in there, and you've got to edit it. And it's only, I think, when you look back after 12 months or 18 months that you can see, like, okay, yes, this has a cohesiveness, this has a coherence, there's an identity to Caravan. And you have to start with that, or else you won't get it at the end, but you also have to sort of stick with it. Because otherwise you end up, I think, producing something that just sort of feels like a collection of articles. And I think what happens in that context is that the reader doesn't feel like they've got to read it.
Right. I mean, and something that we've noticed while we've been here, and it's true everywhere, but perhaps especially here, is the way the media really snowballs around different issues, and some issues get completely overblown and others get kind of ignored. So I'm wondering, how much does the news cycle inform Caravan's work?
Well, I think it's hard. I mean, it's sometimes I see it as a temptation to be resisted, where everyone is talking about something and we start to get a little nervous and we start to feel like, oh, you know, we're going to be left out if we're not doing something about this. But I sometimes think it's a sort of idea of, you know, discretion is the better part of valor, that, you know, you... I can think of times where there's been a big issue on the national stage. The one that jumps immediately to mind is not an issue so much. It was the elections in Uttar Pradesh last year. That was kind of all anyone talked about in Delhi for 2 or 3 months. And we knew, because of the timing of these elections, that it just wasn't going to be possible for us to do something about it. That, you know, if we tried to write a piece, we'd publish our piece, and then the results would come out, and then our magazine would come out. You know, we'd send the piece to press, and we got to wait 2 weeks. And, you know, rather than trying again to sort of fight on terrain that is unfavorable to you, we just had to say, look, okay, we're not gonna tackle this. I think the flip side of that has been trying to think about, okay, what's news that stays news? And what are issues or ideas that we know are still gonna feel urgent? I mean, this idea of urgency, I think, I use it in, I guess, a very figurative way, but that, you know, if we publish this piece 4 months from now, people are still gonna care about it, because whatever the subject is, we know that it's still going to be something that feels like it's part of the national conversation. And, you know, one thing that has, I think, made us stand out, and you know, people who are fans of Caravan, I think, very much admire this, is that we do a lot of research, we do a lot of reporting. A piece like the Narendra Modi profile, or even a piece like the profiles in our media issue of Samir Jain, the owner of the Times of India, or Arnab Goswami, the Times Now host, those are both like 6 months of work, you know. The Modi piece might have even been like 8 months, you know. You're doing 50, 60 interviews. So in some ways you pick your battles where you say, okay, look, people are still going to care about this. You know, Arnab is a story in, you know, May 2012, and in December 2012, when we publish the piece, he's still going to be a story.
Right. So we're at the Jaipur Literary Festival, and everyone's consuming literature, talks on literature, dialogue, discussion. Do you think this is reflective of India's sort of reading public, or is this a really exceptional space that only exists once a year?
I don't think it's an exceptional space, exactly. I think something you've seen in India in the last couple of years is a sort of lit fest boom, which has obviously, I think, been driven by the success of Jaipur. So you could almost draw an analogy to the way in which... you know, they built this Guggenheim Museum in Bilbao, and it put the city on the map. And now all of these other cities all around the world want Frank Gehry to come build, you know, big, shiny museums, hoping that, you know, the same thing will happen. So, you know, in the last 2 months alone, we're here at the Jaipur Festival. A few weeks from now, there's a festival in Calcutta. There's a festival in Rangoon or Yangon, Burma. There's a Gaul Literary Festival in Sri Lanka. Last month, I was at the Bombay Literary Festival, hosted by the Times of India, which is one of two Bombay literary festivals. Earlier this month, I was at one of two literary festivals in Calcutta. There was a literary festival in Goa in December, which I was invited to but skipped because you can only go to so many literary festivals. I think that there is a growing audience for reading here. I think it's still smaller than people think. And in that regard, the size of the crowds here may not necessarily be indicative of economic prosperity for the Indian publishing industry. I have heard or have read places that India is now the world's second largest market for English language books after America. So something is going on here.
Well, do you think that sort of with this growth of literary festivals and perhaps literary festival madness, there's a risk of commodifying literature in a bad way?
You know, I think someone, maybe Howard Jacobson, actually said on this panel about the future of the novel yesterday that, you know, maybe festivals will come to replace reading. I think of it as being more of a leading indicator, that it's a sign that people are excited about reading and that at the moment it's easier to go to a festival than it is to read books in some ways. I mean, geographically and logistically speaking, it's easier to sit at home and read a book. You know, it reminds me a bit of the debate that took place in America about, you know, what was Oprah's book club a force for good or a force for evil, you know? And people would say, well, it's a force for evil because these are very shallow, sort of melodramatic books, or many of them, I guess, were seen that way. And other people said, no, yeah, anyone who's getting people reading, this is great, this is important, we need this. One of the things that is notable about Jaipur, I met an American newspaper editor who's here, and, you know, he said after 2 days, what was he... He was most surprised by just the incredibly high quality of the discussions that were taking place. So, you know, he had known all of this stuff about Jaipur and what a big festival it is, and I taught him the word tamasha, which is everyone's favorite way to describe Jaipur. But, you know, even when it's at its most tamashaed, as it was last year, all day long there are 20, 30, 40 very serious panels taking place, and there's actually, like, really high-level stuff being talked about, you know? Not every panel is of the same, you know, universally high quality. But I do think that people are not just coming here to see literary celebrities. They're coming to hear talks that really are kind of getting into, you know, what do writers do? What does literature do? How do we think about reading? I also think that there's a way in which, like, just as once upon a time, you know, musicians made their money from selling records, and now increasingly they've turned to touring as a way of kind of reaching out to audiences and giving people something that they can't necessarily get in their own home. I think you get a bit of that with a festival, and writers, I think, are very ambivalent about this because they feel like, why do I have to go out and perform being a writer? Right. You know, it's not the same. I'm not a band. But I think you see some writers who have really embraced this.
So, you're from the US, you're not from India, and you grew up on magazines like The New Yorker, I presume. But then again, working in the media or being a commentator or working in literature in India is not uncommon for outsiders. We've got here William Dalrymple, the co-director of the festival, Patrick French, many others. How does having an outsider's eye assist your work, and how is it detrimental to this work?
I think that I am in an odd position here because both William and, not to overgeneralize, but what has been, I think, slightly unique about my experience has been that I'm working in Indian journalism. Right. There are other Americans and other foreigners who work in Indian journalism, but I think I'm not here as a writer, I'm not here as a foreign correspondent, I'm not here as a person whose job it is to explain India to an audience back home. That has shielded me in a very nice way. So it's meant that, you know, I'm occasionally, you know, called upon to give my opinions about this or that, and I certainly hold forth on Twitter, you know, every day or two. I think that I have had a much more, I don't know why, I don't want to say immersive experience exactly, but it's kind of, you know, my job is to work behind the scenes at Caravan and to work almost entirely with Indian writers and almost entirely with a, you know, staff of colleagues who are all Indian to produce Indian journalism that Indians want to read. And I think almost immediately, just by virtue of that, various pitfalls that often afflict foreign commentators, I've been spared because I'm not the kind of generalization about India that drives Indians crazy is not something that's part of my job. Whereas if I was a correspondent writing for a paper back home, in some ways that would be part of my job.
Yeah. In the last panel we were at, you posed a question: can a non-Jew write a Jewish novel? Can a non-Indian be an Indian journalist?
Well, I mean, I keep joking that, you know, I'm an Indian journalist by definition. My joke is that I'm not Indian, but I'm an Indian journalist, and it's a stupid joke, I guess. I mean, I think there's a very vibrant and healthy argument, which sometimes is a bit narrow and nationalistic, about who gets to write about India. And rather than writing this off as a sort of stupid debate, I think it's actually an important one because it's a way of... I tend to be someone who feels like literary arguments, although they're sometimes kind of tempests in teapots, are kind of clarifying because they tell us something about how politics and literature go together. They tell us that, you know, the literary or the journalistic is not something that you can sever from the political. And I think one of the things that has often been a bone of contention in this question of how foreigners write about India has been about generalizing and has been about abstracting and has been about the idea, the ambition that I think is more common to foreign authors than to Indian authors to capture the whole country between two hardcovers. And in some ways that's totally natural. You know, I think if you're trying to sell a book in America, you know, the Americans are interested in India.
Right.
You know, they're not interested in, you know, I don't know, Gujarat or Punjab or, you know, Hijras or, you know, Mughal art or, you know, India is the thing. In some ways, I think maybe there's a bit of displacement there, that the who can write about India argument is really an argument about what we write and how you decide to write about India. I mean, I think I am on record in many places as being a tremendous admirer of Catherine Boo's book about Mumbai. And I think what gives that book its integrity and its authenticity is that she has refused to try to make the canvas too big. You know, she found a place and she found people in a place and she put herself there and she spent a lot of time there. And her only goal was to tell the stories of the people who lived in this place. And there are, you know, lots of places in the book where she has to reach out and kind of explain things by reference to a slightly larger, you know, development on the national level or to, you know, the history of what's happened in India since 1991 and economic liberalization. But I think that book has an integrity to it because it doesn't try to be anything more than what it is. And I think, you know, ditto for Caravan articles and, you know, in some ways, I guess, I'm really reaching here for me as an American working here has been like to not try to be more than what I am. I'm the editor of a magazine. It's a magazine that Indian is designed for Indian readers. But also I'm just the middleman in some ways between the writers and the readers. You know, it's magazines need to be edited and editors at magazines, at least at Caravan, do a lot of work, but it's not my magazine. You know, it's sort of my job is to kind of help people tell these stories better.
To use another one of your precepts, urgency. What is the most urgent issue in India?
To me, the big story is that, or my sense of one story is that we're at a bit of a crossroads here. We had kind of a mildly bogus narrative that was, you know, a very beloved one, especially of the international press, which, you know, we file under the name of India Shining. I think no one still believes in that, although there's a bit of a hangover in which we're still sort of getting over the fact that maybe it's not going on anymore. I would argue that it was never entirely true to begin with. I think there's a bit of a tension where you have an elite that often thinks of itself as a middle class, although I don't think it is really a middle class. And I sense, I think, a rising frustration among this strata of the population with how things are going in the country right now. And I think part of this is born of a despair that the economic growth that was supposed to deliver us from some of these, what I think are thought of here as old problems, has not in fact washed away things like caste. It has not washed away things like gang rape in moving buses. And it has not delivered prosperity to all of the people who we wanted it to deliver prosperity to. And I think there is a sense right now of arguing about the future of the country and about the direction in which things should go in terms of, okay, how do we correct this course? But of course, there's no consensus about that, and there's a great deal of arguing about it. So that's, I mean, this is something that's interesting to me, and this is a very Delhi perspective, because this is, I think, if you sit in Delhi as I do, and you read English language newspapers and magazines, and you watch TV, this is what these sort of Anglophone elite likes to argue about. But I think the consequences of these arguments are pretty big.
That was Jonathan Shannon, senior editor of the Caravan magazine, in conversation at the 2013 Jaipur Literature Festival.
This piece was produced by Meera Sharma and Henry Peck.
This has been Almira Radio. Thank you for listening.